Hello.
Hey, how's it going?
Good. How are you?
Good. Good to see you.
Same here.
All right. We have a number of people that are going to be missing today. So I think it may be a smaller group. And I think a couple of people have graduated. So the group is winnowing down. And I have, I'm actually not marketing this program anymore. So it'll just sort of winnow down eventually to whoever's left. All right, Doug, how are you, sir?
I'm good. Thank you, sir.
Good, good. Okay, so today what we're going to be talking about is alignment of teams around goals and actions. So how do you get a bunch of people moving in the same direction at the same time? There's good. Lots of different elements to that, but the piece that I'm going to be talking about is around goals and strategy. And I'm going to show you a technique that I usually recommend and like. And I think I need to call up a particular tool. Hold on just a second.
You're going to fight with your presentations software again, aren't you?
Yeah, unfortunately, today I'm not fighting with it. Today I'm just, I didn't have my other thing that I wanted to show you guys up. And now I have it. So we're good. Okay. Let me share my screen. We'll get started. Okay. So when I help companies kind of think through how they organize, how they build systems and processes that help people move in the same direction at the same time. There are all these different elements, and some of you may have seen, both of you may have seen some of these elements already. We talked about it earlier in some of the trainings, if you were there. So one is vision. Vision is, why do we do what we do? This is the non-financial reason you exist. And it really can apply to just about anything. It has nothing to do with the business you're in. It's some value you bring to humans in some form or fashion. So my company vision is we exist to cultivate the highest potential in leaders so that they can grow organizations that are good for people in the world. That's why we exist, right? But it says nothing about my actual business, what I actually do. It's just it's a statement of who we serve and the outcome. A mission is then more about how we do it. Now we get more specifically focused on my unique business. So my vision could be expressed in the form of coaching, training, writing books, making movies, any number of things that I wanted to do or create, building apps, all kinds of different things could fulfill that. So my mission is centered around coaching, teaching, and training leaders. So that's a different thing. So this is where I encourage companies to get more specific about their mission. Values are what we expect of each other. There's a whole training, all of this you can find in module one. Then we get into goals. What are the targets we're actually aiming for? And so the vision, mission, and values tend to be longer range, you know, 5 years, 10 years, much, much longer range kind of articulations. Goals tend to be a little shorter range, usually 1 year, sometimes months. Strategy, how are we going to achieve those goals, and structure, how do we organize in support of all of this strategy? And so these top three are how we make meaning. And meaning making is incredibly powerful and important, increasingly in a world where there's a labor shortage crisis that's coming. So people want to feel connected to some kind of purpose. So if you haven't done any of that work, module one will help you articulate and think through that. That's not the focus of today. These three things are really how we make money. And it's really important to distinguish between how we make meaning and how we make money, because your company does not exist to make money. That would be like saying our car exists to get gas in. Doesn't make sense. You will need gas in order to fulfill the purpose of the car. Without the gas, there is no car going anywhere. But our purpose is to get to San Diego. We need gas to get to San Diego. So this bottom part is how are we going to get gas, and how do we keep gas in the tank so that we can fulfill the whole reason we have this company in the first place, which is this mission and vision. So that's how you can think differently, or maybe the same as you already do, about these two components when you're building a team or an organization. And today, what I'm going to talk about is a technique around how you're going to link goals and strategy, how to express and articulate these in ways that are really successful and effective. There are many, many different goal setting methodologies and approaches. You have SMART goals, OKRs, all kinds of different things. Today, I'm just going to talk about one of them. And it's one that I generally like for most situations. I think there are very few situations where it doesn't apply and can be quite helpful. And so when you're trying to get a team to be motivated and connected to your goals and your strategy, the method that I'm going to recommend is an OKR strategy. So this is how I like to link the two together. And I'm going to describe what this is and teach you how to use it. The reason I like OKRs over methods is because it's the best combination of letting your goals stay really aspirational. So you can kind of have that moonshot quality to them that can be quite human, but you'll still allow for this really tangible, measurable progress to be measured along the way. And so that's what I love about OKRs. Now, OKRs, we'll talk about what it stands for. This was developed by Andy Grove at Intel. And I think he did an amazing job. And it really showed in his organization when they started to use these. Now, there are lots of ways that people make mistakes when they're building OKRs. So that's what we're going to talk about today, is how to avoid those mistakes, how to use them best. I'll show you some examples of a couple of companies I recently did this with so that you get a sense and a feel for what we're doing. A couple of things. They focus people's efforts. They align people's actions. They guide decision-making. And they can improve morale when they're articulated properly and they're simple. They also give a sense of purpose. And goals don't always do that. So how do you build an OKR? Well, it's comprised of two parts. One is an objective. So the O stands for that aspirational or inspirational goal. This is directly connected to a higher purpose. And then the KR stands for the key result. And this is the metric we use to measure our performance along the way. So how do we know if we're making progress on the objective? It's through our metric-driven key results. And so now the question is, what makes a good objective? What makes a good objective? Well, first, an objective answers the simple question, what do we want to achieve? That's all you're trying to ask here is, what do we want to achieve? And I recommend that it be inspirational or aspirational. Make sure there are no metrics and keep it really, really simple. So that's the heuristic for designing an objective using this methodology. Inspirational and aspirational, no metrics, keep it simple. So here are some examples. Increase our sales conversions by 2%. Is that a good objective?
I'm going to say no, because it's actually using something to measure it, which is that 2%.
Boom, you got it right. Metrics, not involved. Here's another one. Bring our competitive products and solutions into the marketplace in ways that help businesses grow to their potential. How is that for an objective? Okay. Everybody saying pretty good?
Yep.
I'm going to give it a ding. I think it's too wordy. Too many words. So one of the things that people don't realize when you're leading other people, the simpler you can make something, the more likely it is to be internalized and acted upon. So one of the key mistakes that I see in leadership is people get overly verbose or use lots of technical kind of lingo or insider speak. You're actually wanting to make this really simple and human. Okay, so here's another one. Is this a good objective?
That's too short.
Too short. Okay, good. Yeah, I'm going to call it boring. You know, like it's technically right and it's simple, which is good. I like that. But I think it kind of misses some of the aspirational and inspirational quality. I prefer it if companies get something a little more, that has a little more interest in it. It keeps people engaged in the things that really matter. And so, so you could say like improve the lives of more customers. That might be just, you can feel how that's a little bit more elevated than just improve sales. Like, what is it that improving sales does for others, not just for your company? We know it helps put gas in the tank, but what are we trying to do? Oh, improve the lives of customers. That's pretty generic, right? You might have a more specific way of saying it. I'll show you some examples. Create a team where people want to belong, right? So that's not so much a sales objective, which these are more sales related, but this would be another kind of objective. It's more like, how do we want to create a culture? What kind of culture are we trying to create? So you might articulate it in that way. So that's how to design and write an objective. Keep the metrics out, make sure that it's simple, make sure it's got a little bit of like humanity and aspiration to it. And then you've got yourself a pretty great objective. Comments or questions about objectives before we go to then the second part of goal setting, which is key results. Everybody good? All right. So the second part of an OKR is a key result. Objective is one thing. Now we're talking key results. Key results answer the question, how do we know we're making progress against that goal? It's one thing to say that's where we want to go, but we want to measure our way. Okay, so this needs to be concrete, measurable, and time bound. It's got to be big enough for a quarter at least. If it's too small, it really belongs on a to-do list. So these concrete, measurable, time-bound things need to be large enough for at least a quarter, up to a year, and you're going to look for measurements. So what are some examples for, if we had an objective that was improve the lives of more customers, what's an example of a key result? Well, here's one, increase our sales conversions. How is that for a key result for this particular objective?
It's concrete, but it's not measurable or time-bound.
Well done. Yeah, that's more like an objective, right? So it doesn't have that. And the time you can do differently. You don't have to state the time in the thing. I'll show you how to do that in a minute. Maintain a 10% conversion rate. How's that for a key result?
It's not. It's not concrete. Like, what kind of conversion rate?
Like, so, yeah, great. So it technically is concrete because we're saying you're converting a customer. Let's say I have this many people in a sales funnel, maybe, and I want to convert them at 10%. It's technically concrete. Is there anything else that might be wrong with this? This is kind of a trick question I've thrown out here.
I don't like it because maintaining is staying level, and we're trying to make goals, we're trying to move up, but that's just one.
That's right. That is a KPI, not an OKR. So we got to have management speak, right? So lots of acronyms, we love them. KPI is a key performance indicator. A key performance indicator is something that you're always trying to hit and maintain in an ongoing way that will keep your business successful and effective. And so we know we're within the benchmark or outside the benchmark based on our established understanding of key performance indicators. So those are distinct from OKRs, but they are related. So how could they be related? Well, in a simple term, here's another one. I'll talk about how to fix this in a minute. How about this? Have regular meetings to align the team. How is this for a key result of improving the lives of more customers?
It doesn't relate
to time.
Yeah, right. It kind of, you could indirectly relate it to the objective. There's also not a time thing. There's also something else going on here.
What is regular?
Yeah, right. It's also an SOP. I wanted to introduce another three-letter acronym for business people, right? SOPs are standard operating procedures. So there's a thing that we need to do as an organization to function well. And it's an ongoing thing that has to happen. And so when you're running your business and you're looking at goal setting and doing these things, it's very common when you have others involved, they will accidentally throw in KPIs and SOPs without realizing it. Your job is to understand, like, okay, that's more of like a thing we need to be doing in an ongoing way. It's how we operate our business. That's a standard operating procedure. It goes in a policy, a manual, a cadence of how we operate. This is a KPI. It's a standard set thing that we're always trying to hit and manage. But a key result needs to have that beginning, middle, and end, that sense of we did something, we moved it from one place to another, and we were able to measure it within a certain rough period of time. And so the key result itself doesn't have to say the time, because you can use a spreadsheet or something to tell you what the dates are that things need to be hit by. So the next question is, how might you change this KPI into a key result? Well, here's how I would do it. And one example, right, could be run an A/B test to increase the conversion to 10% or whatever percent you want to state, right? So now you have an actual thing that will take a period of several months that in your campaign you're running, if you're in a sales campaign, this is a sales objective, you can actually enact a technique that will drive the KPI higher. And so does that make sense how that can be, how you can take a KPI and turn it into a key result? Okay, good. So another might be hire one new sales rep. Like that's a really practical, tactical thing that has a beginning and an end. It's measurable. It's not an SOP. You know, it's not a standard operating procedure. It's a thing we need to get done. So hopefully that helps you kind of begin to think through how are we going to think through these KPIs. So now I want to do is show you an example of a recent company that I worked with. We helped build their OKRs. Now here, I have a recommendation. I recommend you don't have more than four OKRs for the company. After four, it starts to get overwhelming for people. So this is how we drive to that simple ideas. Okay, so the first one that they came up with, and I helped them, was build a sustainable runway to fulfill our mission. Now, Osaro is a robotics company, and they're venture-backed. So that means they've got to raise money in order to keep their company afloat. So now they have key results, raise at least $30 million, raise at least $3.4 million in reoccurring revenue or earn at least $3.4. That's more of a customer-facing thing. So they need to get a certain number of customers that get them that kind of reoccurring revenue, and they need to raise at least $30 million in order to build a sustainable runway to fulfill our mission. Number two, free more people from mundane and hazardous tasks. Well, the reality is this is a robotics company and they do what's called piece picking in e-commerce. So they are effectively creating robots and AI that replace the role of a person, a physical person, picking something up and putting it in a bin. And what we know is that there's hazards involved in that. There's workers get hurt and the tasks are incredibly meaningless and mundane and really boring. And so this is part of their mission. Now you could have said sell more robots, but they wanted to, we talked about and wanted to find a way to get the feeling of higher purpose involved in that. Excuse me just a second. That's my dog there going a little crazy. Okay, so what does that mean? Well, they want to deploy software solutions to at least six new projects. Next, make our product efficient to build and sell. So now this is like a product goal, right? So you have kind of a fundraising goal, then you have a sales goal, and then you have a product innovation goal. You're trying to make your product better and more efficient, right? So now they have, we need a cost of goods sold should be at most 140K. We want to take the time it takes from a purchase order to a deployment down to 4 months. It was at 6 months. Now, this is taking too long. We want to get that down much faster so procurement happens faster. And then the last OKR they chose was a human goal. And that human goal is to create and scale a talent magnet team where people thrive. And they wanted a 95% employee retention, and they want to increase employee engagement scores from the benchmark. And we didn't have a benchmark at that time, so we didn't. We were going to set a benchmark, and then we were going to decide what percentage we think we can increase that by. So that's an example of OKRs. I'm gonna quickly, let me actually just step out of this for just a second. I'm going to show you one other company OKR. Where are we? There we go. This is another one. I won't go through all of it, but here's another example. This is a private equity real estate company. Create outsized returns for everyday people. So what they do, their company, they go out, they raise hundreds of millions of dollars from institutions, and they deploy them in various real estate asset classes, workforce housing, student housing, medical office spaces, things like that. They invest in those things. So what they have is their goal, their first goal is actually to create outsized returns for the people who are in these pension funds. So these are teachers and auto workers and all kinds of people that are in these $300 million pension funds. So what's really fun about this company is you can imagine it's a whole bunch of like very finance oriented, very complex, very not a very human organization, right? But they found a way to connect what they do to something really meaningful, that they have an impact on the 401ks and the pension plans of everyday people. Next one, fund our mission and path for team growth. They need to go out and raise that money. And without raising that money, their company doesn't have money. So they got to go out and raise that money. That's a fundraising goal. First one is really a fund performance goal. The second one is a fundraising goal. The third one is invest in spaces to create better living and health. So when we get that $300 million, how are we going to go and invest it? You know, we've got to go find really good spaces, and we want to improve those spaces. We want the people who live there to benefit from our investment in it. And then we want that to generate returns, which goes back to that first goal. And then the last one is they came up, you know, I always recommend a fourth goal that's connected to people almost always. And that is grow and retain an excited, smart team of brand ambassadors, right? So, and all these key results are related to their fund performance and fundraise and all that kind of stuff. So make sense? All right. Comments or questions about these elements before we move on to how to work with this and some techniques?
When you're creating these, do you typically do this with the team of the senior management or?
Yep. And what I'll typically do is I'll say, you know, let's start with like a situation analysis. We look at what's going on in the world and the marketplace and what's happening and what it is, you know, you need in order to survive and all that kind of stuff. And then we start going, okay, what are the categories of our business that we know we want to do some goal setting in? So we're like, we know we have fundraising, we know we have products, we know we have, or whatever it is, right? So each business has its own set of categories that it needs to be effective in. And so you'd identify what those categories are. You try to shrink it down to no more than four. I almost always try to have one of them be a human person, you know, staff kind of related employee goal. And then these others create lots and lots of kind of force multiplier focus. And that's why I'm always trying to drive people to like three. There are other things your business are going to do and they're going to be important. But when you want to move the needle on something, you're picking three big things that you want to move the needle on for a year. And then you can break it down in by quarters. So the way I would do it is like your objectives would be year-long objectives, could be 20-year objectives. I mean, it doesn't have to be, but you might have those for a long time. But your key results are often broken down by quarter. Some of them are going to be year-long. Some of them are just going to be a quarter. And so the key results can change and update, but the objective would be basically held the same.
Okay. Because I'm listening to it, I'm looking at it, and I'm thinking about it with my team, I have myself and my three core people, and we're a small business. We have 10 to 15, sometimes 20 other people beyond that working it during the seasonal portion of it. And knowing the people I've got in there, I'm thinking I'm going to have to come in with these. I'm going to have them already in mind as to what they need to be.
Yes.
And then present them in such a way that we collaborate to come together with them. But I'm going to have to.
That's right.
To a particular space.
Yeah, it's like an 80-20 rule. You want to bring it in pretty close to 80% of the way there so that they know what the framework is. You know, when I talk about how we make meaning and how we make money, like vision, mission, and values, those need to be really cultivated indigenously and as a community, and there is a way to do that, and I teach that. But when it comes to goal, strategy, and structure, that needs to be top-down. Mm-hmm. You know, and people can comment and adjust, but ultimately it needs to be kind of driven by you, the leader. That's great. Okay, so this probably won't apply to all of you. I'm going to just show you this more for solution awareness down the road if you're ever running a bigger organization or your organization scales. When you have multiple levels, what you can do that's quite powerful is you can have organization-wide OKRs, which are the four I just showed you. And then you can have team OKRs that link to the parent OKR. So let's say it's all about building a more efficient product. Well, in product, you have hardware and software. Those are two different teams. And you can create specific OKRs for that team that's going to impact this bigger objective around building a more efficient product, right? And then out of that, if you have enough people, then you can have individual OKRs that link to the team OKR. And so this is how you cascade so that suddenly what somebody is doing that is a tedious, repetitive task that they don't really know how it relates to anything else in the organization, you're now linking their behaviors directly to the highest purpose that you've established as a leader. Now, again, this does not apply to probably most of you, but it's just good to know that that's a way to do it, that that's one of the things you can unfold. And in some cases, you can skip the team and go right to individual OKRs and say, okay, if we know this is one of the things we need to achieve and your role really impacts that one OKR more than any of the others, what are your three big objectives for this quarter or this year? And then you can have each individual build their own OKRs. And you can train them in how to build that OKR, right? So that's a technique you can use if you want, or you can just do a team level. But there's a lot more power when you start to cascade it and you connect people's daily behaviors to bigger objectives and goals. So comments or questions about that before I dig into general rules, and then I'm going to show you a couple of tools that I recommend that you can use if you want to enact something like this. I can show you how to use that. But any comments or questions about this? Okay, great. So a couple of general rules. These are the heuristics. Number one, no more than four company-wide OKRs. Number two, no more than three key results per objective. Now, sometimes we can cheat that. It depends on what you're doing and what kind of business you're in. But, you know, I try to limit it to three. Again, we're looking for that simplicity. We don't want your OKRs to become a to-do list. They need to be high level enough that they're not unbearable and unruly and overwhelming. Keep in mind that some objectives actually have to be hit and others might be more ambitious. It's okay to acknowledge that, hey, this key result over here is something I'm hoping and shooting for. I don't know if I'll get it. And then there's the other key results that are like, without that, the business dies. So it has to hit that. We have to hit that. And it's important for you to have those conversations with people so they know which key result are we having to hit and which ones are we not. That's about getting alignment on which are which. Now, here are some...
We refer to those internally as our BHAGs, our big, hairy, audacious goals.
There you go. Yeah.
Ones that don't have to be hit, but we'd love to.
Yep, that's right. And what you can use is you can make all of your BHAGs the objectives of OKRs. And then your key results, you can decide whether you want those key results to be really aspirational or whether you want them to be really like, you got to hit this. And so you get to decide. Some you're going to want to design as you got to hit, and some you might want to design a little more aspirationally. Some flexibility there. Common mistakes. We've already said some of this. Confusing KPIs and OKRs. Key performance indicator is an ongoing benchmark that determine if you are performing to standards. So it is not a time-bound thing you're trying to change. OKRs are time-bound, measure progress against achieving a goal. Two, confusing SOPs and OKRs. So a standard operating procedure, these are ongoing actions describing the way workflow happens. You are not measuring progress against them as you are with an OKR. Making key results just another objective. Remember, key results should be tracked against one of the following metrics: percentage complete, dollars achieved, a number of things that happened and whether it's complete or not complete. So that's a legitimate one. You have this kind of binary yes or no, it either happened or it didn't. I prefer to try to lean towards the other ones because you can at least track progress along the way. Another common mistake is too short a time frame. Like if you can complete the task in a couple of weeks, just add it to a to-do list. It doesn't need to end up in like a key result process because it's time consuming to build OKRs. And so you want to make sure they're a long enough time frame. So I'd say a minimum quarterly or annual goal is really what you're talking about. Too many objectives or key results, you know, no more than four, no more than three for the team, and no more than three results per objective. So if you're doing like a team OKR or an individual set of OKRs, I would also limit those to three, no more than three, if you can. And then we're not going to do this right now because we don't have to. Okay, I think, yeah. Yeah. Okay. That's good. I think we're good. So then the other thing I just wanted to show you is an example of a software. There's several platforms that you can use. One, sometimes people just use a spreadsheet and they map their OKRs on a spreadsheet. If you're a slightly bigger business, you can do like a software platform that charges you like, you know, $8 a month per employee to have access to this to get everybody aligned. This one is called 15.5. It's a little bit more premium priced. I think you also have Lattice, which is also more premium. The most affordable I've found is Office Vibe, which looks like this here. Very similar. I mean, honestly, all of the stuff looks very similar. You have goals, you have how to do one-on-ones, you have surveys, employee engagement surveys. That's Office Vibe, and that one is the least most affordable. You have 15.5. You can see it looks almost identical. There's a few key things here. You've got employee engagement surveys, et cetera. But here's the objectives that I'm going to show you. So we just took Osaro, that computer company that had those four, the robotics company. They have four objectives. Well, out of this, you have the team that people are the sales and solution team. Certain individuals have goals. You can have, so this just shows you, there we go. So it's cascading and it's showing you whether something is past due, at risk, behind. And then you can get into like individual goals, which are over here, and you can see how people are doing. So as a leader of the business, you can look at a snapshot of all the various activities that are going on in your organization, and you can kind of map like, oh, it looks like we're ahead here, we're behind there, this is past due, I want to check in on that person, there may be a good reason for it. So there are softwares that help you manage all the things that are going on in your business, and both Office Vibe and 15.5 do this. And they also house all your one-on-ones. So if you're having one-on-ones with people, all the notes and everything are taken there. Everything that happens in your one-on-ones can feed into performance review conversations that are automatically populated against the OKRs. So there's a way to integrate all this stuff so that it is supportive of the business you're trying to run. Again, not necessary for everybody. Some organizations that have a lot more operational complexity, I think, benefit a lot more from this. Others, this will start to feel like overkill, like we don't really need this much. And so you get to decide. There are plenty of people for whom I got them Office Vibe because I just wanted them to start doing regular employee engagement surveys, and they've got them already preloaded, externally benchmarked. It's pretty effortless. Press a button, people take it, and you know where your employees are. There's a whole bonus on how to measure employee engagement, which I talk about. But as a consequence of that, they're like, oh, we've got this goals feature too. Maybe we should use that. And so we just start inputting the goals, right? And you can click on these goals and you can see what the key results are, who owns that goal, what the time frame is. So like an example would be if I wanted to create a new goal. Let's say I want to create a team goal and I want it to improve stuff. I'm going to select my team. It's Will's team. Now my timeline, right? So this is where I can decide how long I want it to be out. I'm going to do, you know, that's when I want it to start and this is when I want it to end, whatever. You can choose that. And then you can add your key results. And each time you add a key result, look at that, it gives you, are you going to use a metric, a percentage, a complete or not complete? This one doesn't have dollar signs, but that's fine because the number metric is the same and you can decide what your target is. So I want to raise $100 million. I'm going to just go to 100 and we're starting. We've already got $15 million and raise money. You know, obviously that's not how it would be written, but I also want to link it to a parent goal, which is I want to fund our mission. And so now I have that. And then, so once you click that button and publish it, you now have that next layer in and it kind of tracks everything for you. So it just, again, it's just an easier way to manage this than a spreadsheet might be. But for many people, a spreadsheet is also sufficient. But I just wanted you again to have some solution aware stuff here. Okay. That is sort of the end of my training. Comments or questions about any of the stuff we just talked about? And if not, we can hand it over to coaching conversations. Anything you guys need coaching around or want support on, questions you have in your business unrelated to what I just presented.
A question. I mean, besides employment, I mean, employee surveys or employee engagement, how about like engaging employee to survey you as a boss?
Say more about that. What do you mean?
Like, you know, like how do they feel about you kind of thing? Like the management, yes. The management and stuff. Like, yes. Like, is that something like incorporate on that app that you showed us?
Yeah, great question. So yes, an employee engagement survey will always have questions related to leadership, but it's almost always vague and general on purpose. And if you have fewer than five responses, like in a given department, let's say you manage a department and you only manage five people answered the survey, they will suppress all the results because under five people, you can't anonymize it. So that's why employee engagement surveys really need to be company-wide. And they generally don't get specific about a manager. So what you can get is leadership might get low scores and it might be assumed that that's the top leadership and that may be true, but it's a little hard to pinpoint who it is that it's talking to. But it's definitely something I recommend. Like if you're concerned that your CEO maybe has lost the trust of people and maybe there's a morale issue and it's maybe connected to him, and a survey like this will help surface that. It won't answer all the questions. It'll give you a sense for where you need to go look. So let me see if I can find an example of some results. So Office 5 uses it differently than 15.5. And I have a more recent survey that I want to show you. So this is 15.5. And 15.5 and Office 5 and all these, they're all research-based. They use very similar methodologies. Similar kinds of questions. Let me look at the results here. So we did a campaign. So here's what happened. We benchmarked, right? We got an 83% response. Oh, wait, I'm not sharing my screen, am I?
You are not.
No.
Let me do that. That's going to be more helpful to you. I promise. Whoops. Wrong screen. Let's try that again, people. Expect a little more from a varsity letterman. Okay, here we go. So these are results from the computer company. They did, or I'm sorry, robotics company. They did in January, they did this. They had a 70% engagement score. Now, the nationwide average of engagement is 50% engagement. The global average is 30%. So why is a company getting 70% treated as disengaged? Well, the reason is because we selected an external benchmark for organizations in our industry. And it turns out that robotics and software has much higher employee engagement than, let's say, Wendy's, right? So you can feel how your competition needs to be benchmarked externally to the right kind of organizations. And so what I would hate for you to do is see this number and go, wow, 70 is disengaged. You run your own survey and you get 20 or 50 or 60. Let's say 60, and you're like, wow, we're doing terrible. But if you benchmark it against your industry might be at 50, in which case you're in the green. That doesn't mean you should stop driving your engagement scores up, but it does mean you want to understand who you're benchmarked against. Response rate. that's an important piece. Like, are people actually filling this out or not? Let's see here. So this shows you each department and how they scored, right? So there's different ways. There's some other thing I wanted to show us though. Hold on a minute. You all are in the way. Is it manager? No, it's not manager. Maybe it's team. Yeah, so this is weird. There's something I'm missing. Oh, drivers. There we go, drivers. So then you can dig in a little deeper and look at, like, here are each driver of engagement, like meaning. You have a definition of what meaning is, and the surveys, the specific survey statements that were asked that were aggregated to get at meaning or capacity or goal support, shared values, utilization, fairness, leader integrity. That's where you'd get some answers around that, right? And here you're getting a score, which is like slightly above and slightly below. So that's that. I think heat map is something else. So this is another way you can look at it. Here's our various people. And what I'm noticing here is the software engineering team scored really low on meaning. You know, the variance is negative 0.2. And while we have some positive scores in here, you know, you can go all the way up to 4, right? So this company, what that means is, do you see any 4s here? I don't see any 4s, which means there's not a lot of bad stuff, but there's also not a lot of excitement either. Does that make sense? Mm-hmm. So anyway, this is just another way to help you map and see how your team might be feeling or doing. And there are different tools that will all do it differently. Here's another one. We don't have it set up. We need to. The ENPS score is a great question to ask. It's literally the net promoter score that, like, marketers use. Well, they do it for employees too, which is just one simple question. Would you recommend somebody else work here? And you can get one single score that can tell you a whole lot. And so that can be really helpful to track as well. So, you know, Manette, I'm not sure if that answers your question, but that hopefully gives you, like, a little bit of a sense for, like, leader.
Yes, it did. Thank you so much.
Yeah, you bet. Okay, good. Other questions?
I took a brief, while we were talking there, I did a quick search for some different spreadsheet templates and such for OKRs, and there's a bunch of them out there.
Yep.
Some they want to collect your email information because they want to market to you, and that's fine. Yeah. Are there any that you recommend specifically?
You know, because the kind of scale of companies I work with privately is almost always they're at a scale where they need, like, an actual tool. I'm not as familiar with the spreadsheet stuff. I've just literally muscled my own. I've never looked at templates, but it's great. Yeah. If you just search for a template, I'm sure there's a lot out there that work great. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And the advantage to a tool like that is I do recommend organizations do regular employee engagement surveys. And then my bonus, how to measure employee engagement, I highly recommend that. And I definitely recommend a professional tool for that. I do not recommend you try to find your own way to figure out how to do a survey. And the reason is because there's a ton of research around it, but the big thing is you get access to external benchmarks. And that is a big difference maker for you to know how to even interpret your scores, to know, like, what should you focus on and what shouldn't you, all that kind of stuff.
And net promoter scores are awesome.
Yep. And so employee net promoter score is really interesting. So if you're going to get one of those tools, almost all of them just include OKRs as a way that you can do it. You can also do SMART goals. So, like, Office Vibe and I believe 15.5, both of them, you can, if you like SMART goals instead of OKRs, you can do that. I prefer OKRs, but they both work great. So there we are.
I don't have a lot going on. I have a lot going on, but I don't have a lot going on specifically of this, but everything. And I keep going through all of the other videos as well. And everything's just so useful. And it's a great resource.
Oh, I'm happy to hear that. Thank you for sharing that. Yeah, I mean, you know, when I do these calls, all I'm trying to do is, for some of you, this won't be relevant right now. You know, you'll be focused on other things and be like, I don't really need this now. That's fine. I just want you to know what exists, how to think about it.
So yeah.
Because at some point you might get to the place where you're like, we need to be more aligned in our goals. How do we do that? Well,
yeah.
You got a tool. And this training that I just did has not been in the modules. So I'm going to add it to the modules. I'm going to take one of these recordings and just put it in the modules so you can always find it. Instead, I was trying to go back through a group coaching call.
Yeah.
This is actually really relevant time-wise for me, because we are actually, would have been better to have done this about three to four weeks ago, but we are trying to get everybody. We've been having a little bit of conflict because we're not all aligned and we're trying to get more aligned. And so it is good timing for me.
Good. Yeah. This is a great way to get you aligned for sure. Another comment I wanted to make just as an aside, if you ever get one of these employee engagement softwares and you run surveys, which is amazing because you can get historic data and you can start to see how you're doing. The other thing that is great is the best way to get high participation is to have a company-wide meeting and take 5 minutes as part of that company-wide meeting and just say, everybody go take the survey. And then if you just send it out as an email, people will be like, oh, I forgot. I never got to it, whatever. But it's much more helpful when you just say, hey, everybody hop on right now. We're going to, as part of our meeting, we're going to all take it together. And it usually goes great.
You don't find that you get less honest answers at that point because everybody's together in the room? And
some people, they're all remote, so it depends. Usually people are fine. What'll happen is the way that you get, and you should, if you're going to do employee engagement, you should watch the training on it. It's probably some aspects of it are going to be overkill. It's for a bigger organization, but you can easily reverse engineer and make it less sophisticated. And the real key to employee engagement is to communicate back to them that you heard them and that you're going to act on it and tell them what the actions are. You're only going to pick a couple of things, like two or three things you're going to focus on for the next 6 months. Here are the things we're going to focus on, and then we're going to measure again. And what happens is when you do that a little bit more consistently, people start to go, oh, you're actually listening. And I haven't been punished yet. And so I'm going to start getting more honest. So it's not uncommon for employee engagement scores to go down after a couple of measurements, because people start going, oh, I can be honest and not get dinged. And they're actually showing me that they're listening. So you actually end up with better scores later. We've done it where I think probably because the methods I use, I guess, are different. Our global HR consulting firm came in and said to us, expect 2 years of down scores, and in the third year, it'll increase. And so we did, I started implementing all the things I teach in this whole course, honestly, with a company. And we started measuring employee engagement, and we increased every year starting right away from the beginning and ended up outperforming the highest performing companies in the world within just 2 years. And so this stuff is real. It works. We've gotten results. And all we did was pretty much the stuff you see in these trainings.
Nice. So. That's interesting. That's an interesting comment about as they begin to realize that you're going to actually listen to what they have to say, they might get more honest, because my business is a franchise and the franchisor has begun doing these surveys. And we have much better leadership than we did when I first got in. And the scores recently went down a little bit, and that actually may very well be part of it.
Yes, it probably is. Mm-hmm. And, you know, sometimes it goes down because the world changes, or there's lots of things that can happen. But yeah, so that's great. Anything else? Anything else you guys want to talk about unrelated to this?
Are there trainings in there? I apologize. I've been through it. I've had a very busy week, so my head's not all here necessarily right now. Resolving conflict between leadership within the company.
Yes.
We're making progress on it, but it does sometimes create some issues.
Let me call up, I'm going to share my screen and I'll call up the actual leadership program. Hey, were you, I'm assuming you were able to get access to the modules.
I did finally get back into it all. Yes.
We're so sorry about that. It's weird. It's so weird. We've had this happening like repeatedly, and I have been irritated.
Well, I had not been able to see the bonus stuff. Then they got me the bonus stuff. Then I could see the bonus stuff, but I couldn't see the rest. Now okay, I can see both.
Everything, right?
Well, as of last week, I could see both.
Okay, great. All right. So let me just, the reason I can't remember off the top of my head. So how to have hard conversations is one area where you definitely want to review and understand all these elements, because it has quite an impact on how you're going to have conversations with others. You're going to potentially use some of this to be like, okay, here are the ways we're going to have this conversation, depending on what's going on. That's one possibility, right? So without knowing all the details, it's better for me to just show you a few places to look, and then I'm happy to dig in with you on specifics if you want. So that's one. If it's you're trying to manage down, then it's more this module 3.
That right there looks like it'll probably be a big part right there, growing potential in others. I've got a guy that he's a great guy, and he's got such potential, but his background gets in his way, and he needs to get past it. And he knows it. We've had the conversation. And part of it's on me. I need to be better at how to pull some of that out of him.
Yep. So that's going to be really big. The other thing that can happen when you have a lot of conflict in a team, I've found, instead of having to deal with personalities and issues like that, when I go to module 4 and I introduce the RACI chart, sometimes that can alleviate. Are you familiar with RACI? Have we talked about that yet?
We talked about it a couple of weeks ago.
Okay. That can often resolve conflict depending on what's going on. Another one that can, depending on what's happening, is if you have a kind of peers that are equal players and they're having a hard time adjudicating who needs what, and the RACI isn't solving it, and you're not wanting to override, you're wanting to create something, it's totally valid for you to just be like, this is the answer, sorry, deal with it. But another thing you can do is you can do this kind of what I call like a pencil process, which is, it's just about offering and asking. Like, you structure a conversation around how you're actually offering what you want to offer to the person, asking what you need, and there's a red, yellow, green light process that helps you facilitate those conversations. I typically use that more for like when it's partners in a business, like two partners own a business and they don't have more power than the other, and so they're trying to negotiate and adjudicate a way of working and it's not working. This process creates a lot of clarity around what do I actually need? What am I really asking for? What don't I need? And so, you know, these videos at the end, video 10 and 11, are how do you form better agreements so that people actually honor the thing they say they're going to do. And then there's a little little download here that is probably not showing on the share thing, but that's okay. It's kind of,
yeah, I can go and get that and take a look at that.
Okay, so there you go. Those would be the things, but if you want, I'm happy to dig in a little bit with you and just talk about it more specifically, and then I can guide you a bit more there.
Yeah, my biggest issue is I've got two team members that have been with me for the last 5 to 7 years now, between the two of them, and we started out very loose, just wild, wild west. We just need to get it done, just go, go, go. And I've brought a new member in she's really a business manager. She started out as an office manager, and she's got her own personality. She's actually interested in buying the business from me in a couple of years, which allows me to start looking at an exit strategy over time.
Yeah.
And she gets along with both the other two, but they both have their own conflicts with her on a regular basis. And the one guy is, he's a Marine. He's very hard-headed. He refers to himself as a hard-head, jarhead. And he grew up in very different situations than I did. And that sometimes comes out a little bit more than it should.
Yes. Got it.
He has a plaque on his desk, HNIC.
Yes.
And he loves it. Some people don't love that. I could care less. And the people we hire don't. That's not a problem for our business. But yeah, it just gives you a little bit of insight into the attitude at times.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Okay, so, you know, I actually think in that case, module four is all about how you organize people in work. And I think that's probably the starting point for you guys is to get clear on your roles, your responsibilities, your accountabilities, making sure those are mapped properly, making sure they're explicit and clear. And then once that's cleared up, if that didn't clear up the conflict, then it's more personality based. Mm-hmm. And then I think it's more about having those coaching conversations, kind of module two and three, where you're having to guide and lead them and help mentor them in how to interact or how to relate. But often it really starts with, have you properly clarified the structures, roles, and accountabilities so that people, and that's normal, like in your-
That's an easy question to answer. No, we have not.
Got it. Okay, well,
we're going to work on it, and module four will help me get to some of that.
All the best practices are in module four for how to do that, and it'll teach you all the philosophy of how to build that and what tech tools to use to articulate it. So that'll be really helpful for you. I would start there. And then I think the Enneagram, the kind of the personality stuff can be super useful for all of you to get to know each other. And
I sat in on an Enneagram back when I first signed up with you last November, but I didn't start till now. So I heard that and saw that, but I've never had a chance to dig into it. I need to get, and I'm looking forward to that one rolling back around in these classes.
It is coming back around, and it's also available anytime you want in the bonus. Same stuff, but it's in the bonus. So that'd be my recommendation. Those are the things that I think would be great for you for sure. Good. Dana, you're good. Sounds like you're just kind of making your way through things, huh?
We still continue to struggle with staffing. I had brought on a couple new people and one isn't working out. So we're about to dive deep into tech, how we can run the front desk without someone sitting there. So
great.
That's my current project that I'm keeping an open mind about.
A lot of changes.
A lot of changes.
World with AI. It's definitely a new world. That'd be interesting. I'll be curious to know how that works for you.
Yeah, we can do it. Our software has a lot of tools that will allow us to do it. It's just not one of the things that makes us stand out against other medical offices is that we're way more personal. It's going to be interesting, but I think we've got our mind wrapped around how we're going to be able to do it and not lose a ton of that personal touch. Yeah. And just kind of train patients the system that it will make their life easier and our life easier. So it's we've got some work in front of us because we've got to build out some things on the front end and it'll really probably truly make us a paperless office because there's still some things like financial agreements and things like that. Patients sign it and it gets scanned into their chart, but we're building out forms so they can just do it on an iPad. So
interesting.
Yeah. Interesting. It'll be good.
Yeah. Oh, good. That's great. Okay. What else?
I think that's all I have and I'm going to pop off for a 2:00 meeting, but
hey, no problem.
Thank you guys so much.
Appreciate it.
I do have one other question, but it's totally off topic for you.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah.
Do you run these classes with other groups or is the Wednesday afternoon really the primary one you do of this type?
So I do a lot of different things. And sometimes it's like with an entire organization and their whole team that I'll run like a session just like this, but for much larger organization. And then I have this other thing that I did that was more like for people in your position, which don't have a company of 50, 30, 60, 100 people and need a more affordable kind of way in. So this particular thing that I do is at this time, but I do run other groups, but they're for companies.
I was wondering, my wife took a new job and she's her new position, she's now much more managerial than she was before. She's IT.
Okay.
And she's she's got some frustrations, and it's a new job. That's part of it right there.
Yeah.
And I was thinking this actually might be very helpful for her, but she would not want to be in the class with me.
Oh, really?
We've done classes together. I've taught, and yeah, she doesn't do well in the same ones with me all the time.
Okay. Okay. Well, I'm
great.
I'm
traveling and living together, but
yeah, yeah. Right. Right. Well, I'm happy to talk with her. If she'd like to schedule a call with me and we can just explore what I might be able to do to help get her some support. And if they're even just invite her into another group somewhere or, so
I'll see if she's interested. She knows I'm doing something, but she doesn't know exactly what.
Yeah. Right. Well, you some advice. The other thing that I wanted to talk to you about is, it occurred to me, you might be a good fit for this. We are hosting an event. It's not really related to this, like leadership coaching stuff. It's an event run by, it has some of that, but it's an event run by a guy named John Shin, who's a dear friend of ours. We're helping him host this event. It's in Phoenix, 2 days. And it's going to be like business owners and entrepreneurs and stuff like that. And what I love about what John does. So have you ever heard of the book Think and Grow Rich by Napoleon Hill?
Yes.
Okay. Yeah. So he basically got the rights from the Napoleon Hill Foundation, the Think and Grow Rich Foundation, to produce a movie based on the book, a kind of like a documentary style to kind of bring the book to life. It's sold more than 200 million copies. It's the best-selling nonfiction book in the world. And he also went on to write a book called How Rich Asians Think. He's got 50 businesses. Revenue is more than $500 million a year. And he just has this huge range of knowledge and understanding around finance, and both from a personal perspective to business, network, the whole thing. And he runs these 2-day events where it's just like really practical, tactical stuff that I think you would like. And I think you would benefit from a lot. I loved it. I got a huge value out of it. And that's why I asked him, I'm like, hey, I'd love to help put another one of these on. Let me support you. And so he did that. My wife and I are helping him do that. And I think, anyway, so I don't know if that interests you, but you just strike me as somebody who's like, you're right there where you're kind of like, I've got a business that's working. You may be on the eve of selling it. You might have some cash. You want to know what to do with it. This is the kind of guy who knows how to do like a whole lot of stuff. Mm-hmm. And he kind of, what he did, which I thought was fascinating, is he kind of opened the kimono on like, here's how like the super rich think about money. And here's the people we talk to. And here are the service providers we use. So anyway, the other thing is amazing network.
I can't think of the guy's name, the guy that wrote, Rich Dad, Poor Dad.
Yeah. Similar to
He came out with a new book recently.
Yep.
The Capitalist Manifesto, which I've been working my way through, which is actually a really good book.
Outstanding.
Sounds a little bit like him.
He is like, and they're friends actually. So this guy, when he produced the movie, he put $6 million of his own money in, and the movie made $70 million. And so if you want, two things I'm going to invite you to. One is we're going to do an online screening of the movie next Friday night on the 28th. It'll be probably 6 p.m. Pacific time. So that's 9, I think, for you. And so that way you can screen the movie. He's the executive producer of the movie. You can see kind of what he did with that. And then he's on after where we'll do some Q&A with him. Mm-hmm. And that'll give you a feel for John. Amazing human being, great guy. Just the money is great and all that, but I just like him as a human. There are a lot of guys that do what he does that are as big as he is, and they're kind of egomaniacs and not easy to
deal with. We want to be around.
He's just one of these guys that I just love hanging out with. He's just a great guy with a great family, and you'll get a sense for him. Anyway, if you attend that and you like it, and you want to go to his event, which is the 24th and 25th in Phoenix here.
24th and 25th of May.
I know that's probably your busy season, but if you can make it out, what I'm happy to do is he gave me a limited number of tickets that are 50% off. So, you know, if after the screening, and you don't have to decide now, you can decide whenever you want, it'll book up. It's a limit of 25 people. He used to do 500 seats, and he just realized like the kind of network he's trying to create he wants a more exclusive kind of group of people together. So it'll be smaller number of what I think are kind of more interesting network to be in. Mm-hmm. And so it can book up fast after we go public. We're not public with the tickets yet. I'm only offering like tickets to friends and people that I think would be really good kind of at that 50% off rate. Mm-hmm. And I just wanted to extend it to you as having been a great client and thought you'd be a good fit.
Thank you. Well, what is the rate?
So it's $2,000 for the normal rate and then $1,000 for the 50% off. And I would just give you like a coupon code that would take $1,000 right off the price of the ticket.
I would definitely be interested in screening the movie and seeing where I want to go, where you know, yeah, where I think of it after that.
Yeah.
See, I read an interesting article the other day about Napoleon Hill saying that while his book has been absolutely fantastic, they say that in real life, he was actually somewhat of a fraud.
Oh, really?
I don't know how true it is, but because the book is fantastic, but they said that in reality, he put on airs and pretended on a lot of these things. Hold on one second. Charlie, leave him be. I have a 10-month-old puppy and an 11-and-a-half-year-old Bouvier here. The one that was climbing on me, she went back in to see Katie in the other room.
Oh, that's great. I love it. Yes, I have a Chihuahua and a Labrador Retriever. A Golden Retriever, not a Labrador Retriever.
There's the puppy.
Oh, that's adorable.
He's 10 months old. He's about 65 pounds already. And
I love it.
There's Charlie.
Look at that. Look at that. I love it.
120 pounds and bad hips now because he's getting old. He's just getting arthritis.
Oh, that's hard. Yeah, yeah. Ours is 16 months now, I think. So still kind of a puppy. And then we have a 12-year-old Chihuahua. Mm. So she's her ear hearing is going, her eyes are going a little bit, but you know, it's all part of the fun. Oh.
The puppy's only got one eye because he lost one to glaucoma.
Oh wow.
You can send me the information on the screening.
I'll do that. Yeah, I'll probably shoot you over an email with just a little poster that he had put together. And I'm just trying to think if there's anything else. Yeah, I mean, take a look at that. We'll be in touch between now and then. And if it looks like it's booking up, I'll let you know so that you can decide, you know, if there's time, I don't have a need for you to book early. You can kind of take your time to decide. But
and I just have to check and see my schedule.
Yeah. Take a look at that.
In June, I'm going to be in Orlando on the 24th. So,
okay. Yeah. This is May and it's still not unpleasant in Phoenix yet. So that's the good news.
So. I did a thing, you know, in August in Phoenix one year. Oh. We landed on the tarmac and he's like, it's 108 degrees outside. And I swear, going from the hotel to where we were doing the training, which was a 5-minute walk, I was getting sunburned outside.
Unbelievable. Unbelievable. Yeah, it can get pretty brutal here. So we kind of decided to do this last minute. He normally does everything in LA at his home. And when you go to his home, it's like you walk, he does this for part of his marketing. I think he's not this guy at all, but he's got all the Lamborghinis and Rolls Royces and all these cars. And you walk into his house and it's this mansion with like millions and millions of dollars worth of artwork on the wall. But he just carries it with this warmth and humility. And you just don't feel like you're interacting with a guy of that wealth. And that's what I appreciated about him. I've been around just like you have, I'm sure, people like that. And he was different. And so my wife and I both, after that masterclass, we're like, this is amazing. Like, we need to bring this guy to Phoenix and see if we can introduce some of our people here. So a lot of the people that are becoming will be a little more local, but I have reached out to a few people that aren't local because I just think they'd be a good fit. It'd be fun to meet you in person. So if we get a chance, it'd be great. But
awesome. Well, thank you very much.
Cool, man.
All right.
Chatting.
I'm gonna sign off. No, I'm good.
All right. Well,
I'm getting better all the time.
Awesome. Great chatting with you.
Have a good one. Talk to you next week.
Thanks. Bye.